In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
This is the Mighty Manfred, and it's time for your coolest conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stevens Underground Garage. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. This week's interview took place when I was out on the road with Woggles, playing shows in support of our new album on Wicked Cool Records called Time Has Come. It features our recent coolest song of the world, Her Majesty's Pleasure, which I wrote with our guitarist Shane Pringle. He and I talk about the tune, the album, and Shane's background. But first, we'll hear a portion of Her Majesty's Pleasure on your coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock in Little Stevens Underground Garage.
Proffered hand, a tie to bind, to regal beauty beyond sublime. On humbled knee, I supplicate with love tied to my mistress' fate, and I'll serve at Her Majesty's pleasure. Every torment, a long caress, and I'll serve at Her Majesty's pleasure. But for love, I must confess.
Hey, this is the Mighty Manfred, and with me right now is Shane Pringle. He's one of the two guitarists in the Woggles. He also swaps out a guitar to play sax on some songs, both the live shows and in the studio. He and I wrote the song Her Majesty's Pleasure, which is the coolest song in the world this week. It's off our new Woggles album, Time Has Come, out a week now on Wicked Cool Records. We're speaking today from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. That's where the Woggles are playing tonight at the local 506. Tomorrow, Saturday, we'll be at Hank Deedle's right on the... out on the road right now in support of the new album. And I said Hank Deedles, I mean Hank Deedles in Rockville, Maryland. Shane, how are you, my friend?
Hey, Manfred, how's it going, sir? Good to hear from you.
Pretty good. How are you holding up so far on this tour?
Oh, you know, it's a blast sitting in the van with you, smelling all the smells.
They are special smells. In fact, about that, it's amazing. People definitely have characteristics about them. I mean, they can produce certain smells, and you know immediately who's responsible for that when you roll down the window.
Usually.
So as a grizzled road dog, a touring veteran, do you have any advice for bands starting out?
Oh, my goodness. I would say, you know, bring as much clean socks and underwear as you can. It's probably the best advice I ever got. You know, you can recycle pants and shirts and whatnot, but having a good, fresh, clean pair of underwear and socks can make all the difference in the world, I find.
It makes a man feel fresh every day, doesn't it?
Well, it gives the illusion of it anyway. It gets you through.
Well, yeah. I remember, if I got this straight still, that you were born in or are from Detroit originally, and then you were raised in Florida. Is that right?
Yeah, I lived in Detroit, Michigan until I was about 11 years old or so, I think. Until the economy went to hell there, and pretty much everyone moved away from Detroit, Michigan that year, from what I remember, in the, 1980 or so.
Why did you guys move down to Florida?
Oh, we had some family down there. My grandparents lived down there, and, you know, my father just wanted to get away from the snow. He was tired of the snow, you know? Trying to make a fresh start down there.
Where in Florida did you head to?
Fort Myers, Florida.
And did you said you were 11 when you went down there. Did you finish like a high school in Fort Myers?
I think I was sixth grade or so, yeah. So it was junior, it's junior high school or middle school down there. But yeah, I was not too happy about it. I was not too keen on the idea personally. I like Detroit quite a bit.
So you finished up high school down there. Were you when you moved down there, were you playing an instrument yet or not?
I had been taking piano lessons as a kid or whatever. I think I must have started when I was like 7 years old or so.
Well, no, that's interesting. So
But
why piano lessons?
we had a piano in the house, and my sister had started taking it, and I just expressed interest, and they were like, "I want to," I saw my sister doing it, and I became interested in it, and I kind of took it up, and she kind of dropped it, I kept going with it until I moved to Fort Myers, and then we didn't really have a piano for a while, and I had to pick an instrument in a band at junior high school, and that's when I started playing saxophone.
Well, what drew you to the sax?
It was pretty random, I suppose. I wanted to play key. I wanted to continue playing piano, but you can't march around with a piano, So
I guess
it
they don't
wasn't an
supply you with
option.
keytars or anything like that either, you know, so.
Yeah, no, there wasn't an option. I suppose I could have played like xylophone or something like that, would have been made a lot more sense, but I don't know. Seemed like a cool instrument, pretty random, just we could afford one, I think, maybe.
And so you started taking sax, and that was were you taking lessons for that, or were you, I don't know how,
Now,
you know,
it
I
was
couldn't tell.
part of the school curriculum, it was
Okay.
band in junior high school, and then I was in marching band in high school when you do the halftime shows for the football games and that sort of
Right.
thing. Marching around in a polyester uniform in 100 degrees in Florida weather, it was a blast.
Did you have a big hat on your head, like a big tall
Oh
hat?
yeah. I can show you the picture sometime. It's pretty hilarious. The plume and the polyester uniform with the flared pants and whatnot.
Oh, I bet you were really styling. What were
Oh
the
yeah, the
colors?
ladies were loving it.
Yeah, pretty much a chick magnet there. So, I know you. It's interesting to hear you play, having played piano, and of course, I knew you played sax. But when did you actually start playing guitar? Was that when you were in high school, or when you
I
moved
was
away?
probably about a junior in high school. I was still in the marching band and whatnot. But my dad had always had a guitar around the house too, and I gravitated towards that and took up with some friends that I knew from the marching band who were also looking to get out of the polyester uniforms and into something a little more cool, a little less dorky. And
What do you
yeah,
mean
we
cool in
started a
two? Cool with
band.
two meanings, less dorky and also not as hot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, once I learned a couple bar chords, my buddy Nathan Adams, I think you met Nathan Adams. We met him in Seattle. He was at the Seattle show and lent me a guitar when we played there last time.
Okay.
Yeah, we started a band in his little garage behind his mother's house, and he showed me how to play a bar chord, and like Tim Foster said, I learned Louie Louie, and there was no looking back after that, Once you learn those three chords of Louie Louie, you know about 90% of the rock songs out there.
So, do you recall what the name of this band was?
We had a few names, but the one we ended up getting a paying gig with was called the Social Whores.
Social Whores and a
Yeah, with
paying gig. How old were you when you were
WHORES and
HO? Okay. And
yeah,
how
like
old were you, and
prostitute.
how much long green were you passed along to? How much long green did you make?
Oh man, not too much, but it was a lot to us. We ended up playing at this place. We were underage, so we couldn't get into like the real bars or anything like that. But we got a gig at the teen rock club in town. It was called the Glitter Dome. It was run by a Rod Stewart impersonator by the name of Ricky Smith, who was also a hairdresser. And it was a teen club where, you know, you could, I think you had to pay like $2 for a Coke or something. And there was a cover to get in, but you know, it was all teenagers in there. And we got a gig there. And I think maybe we'd make like 150 bucks or something between the four or five of us. And we thought that was just, you know, the bee's knees at the time.
If, you know, for a lot of bands starting out, making that 150 is still pretty great.
Yeah. I mean, my pay rate hasn't gotten that much better.
No. So that was high school. And I know, what got you out of Florida and up to Atlanta?
Well, you know, there wasn't a lot of a market for original music. You know, the Social Horse Band was a cover band. Like we'd cover, like we did a Dead Kennedy song, and we did like an REM song, and a lot of like David Bowie and that sort of stuff. And we started venturing into like original music, and there just wasn't much of a market for it down there, especially played by 15-year-old boys, you know? So by the time I got to high school, you know, I guess I had seen like Athens, Georgia, Inside Out. And REM was in that movie. It was a documentary about the scene in Athens, Georgia. And I'd seen Dexter Romweber and the Flat Duo Jets and that. And I kind of saw that and I said, well, you know, Atlanta and Athens isn't so far away, and it seems like there's something actually happening up there and nothing happening here in Fort Myers as far as music goes. So, you know, it's a couple months out of high school, I jumped in my 1972 VW microbus, and me and a couple guys from Social Horrors moved up to Atlanta.
Whoa, the band moved to Atlanta. I didn't realize that.
Well, I mean, it was a couple of us. It was, okay. You know, we'd already...
Well, did you try and keep the band going after you moved to Atlanta?
I mean, I played with one or two of the guys for a while. Yeah, we struggled for a while and played like open mics and whatnot, like, you know. But yeah, it wasn't the same band at all. Or we had given up on the Social Horrors name. We knew that wasn't going anywhere.
Yeah. Well, so about what year is this roughly? When you
1988, I believe. Because I remember the Democratic National Convention was in Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
And there was like an enclave of people from Fort Myers that had moved up there as well. So I kind of had like, you know, people's couches to crash on and whatnot from Fort Myers. And I had intended to move into Athens, but, you know, there were just more people in Atlanta.
And so 88, so the Woggle started in the fall. Started in 87, the first party we... First time we played was like Halloween of 87. So you get up to Atlanta, and I know that you've played in a lot of different groups up there. What are some of the bands that you played with in Atlanta over the years?
I mean, you know, there's too many to name them all, but probably the first minor successful one that I played with right around the same time the Woggles must have been going on, and I think we must have played some shows together or, you know, been running around in the same circles was Go Devils. It was probably, we started in probably like 89 or something like that.
Okay. And was
Johnny Bernal? I remember seeing the Woggles around that time. I guess I must have seen you play with like Kurt Wood.
Yeah, the drummer.
I remember him playing drums because he had a very distinct style.
The human pile driver.
Yeah, yeah.
So in the Go Devils, this guy, there was a guy that filled in the Woggles for a few different tours, Johnny V, but he was in the Go Devils too, right?
Yeah, he went by Johnny Love back then. He'll always be Johnny Love to me. But yeah, Johnny Vignol was in that band. And we were probably together about 3 years or so. And then he filled in for you guys when you had some vacancies there.
Right.
Did a couple tours with you.
Well, you know, we're going to talk about you and the Woggles in a moment. But for those who don't know, I want to point out you've had a coolest song in the world before, a song that you wrote when you were not part of the Woggles. Can you tell us about that song and that band?
Yeah, that was I had a band... Or I was in a band with Buffy Aguero, who is married to Buzz Hagstrom. That's kind of my
Right, and Buzz Hagstrom is a bass player in the Woggles.
Yeah, and we probably started a band called Tiger Tiger around 2003 or 2004, I imagine. And she was also in the Subsonics and still is. And we started, about 2004. I had booked, she had a band called The White Lights. And I had been working at the Earl and I was dabbling in booking. And I had booked the New York City band Suicide there and had The White Lights open up. And Johnny Love was also in that band. And that's kind of, I had been peripherally, aware of her and friendly with her before, but that's when we really started to start talking about playing together. And I had a song that was Coolest Song in the World. I don't remember what year it was, probably 2016 or something like that, called The World Keeps Bringing Me Down, that was on a Tiger Tiger album there.
What is that? Which album is it? It's something about a horse is in the title. What is it?
Backing the Wrong Horse, I believe.
Yeah, that's it. Backing the Wrong Horse.
And Jeff Walls produced that album, too.
Right, the Fleshhammer produced that.
Yes. So there again is, some lineage to the Woggles.
Well, when you first sat in with the Woggles, that was on sax, wasn't it?
Yeah. Jeff had asked me to, I think I went to like Huntsville, Alabama with you guys for a show, and then played on three or four songs at the Star Bar with you too.
And Star Bar in Atlanta.
Yeah, Jeff had, this was after he had produced the Backing the Wrong Horse album for Tiger Tiger. And I had also played with him and Phyllis in his band, The Deadlines. I'd sat in with him on saxophone a couple times, or just once maybe, at the Star Bar.
And when you mentioned Phyllis, that's, let me interrupt you here.
I just sat in on saxophone.
Let me interrupt for a second. So when you mentioned Phyllis and the show under her stage name, Lady Fingers, she figures back into the Woggles because she's done a lot of backing vocals and even toured with the band as well, filling in on the bass sometimes. So you sat in with us on sax a couple of times. But you hadn't been playing sax regularly since high school, had you?
I'd had a couple of groups where I played only saxophone, and I had sat in with a lot of bands in town. Thing about playing saxophone is you're kind of like an auxiliary member, sit in with lots of people and not really have to be in the band per se, which is, so it's a lot less of a commitment. So, I was hoarding around Atlanta playing saxophone with a lot of folks over the years.
Well, that's the joke with horn players is that, they're not really in the band and yet they always expect to get paid.
Yeah, they always want money, too. And I usually wouldn't insist on being paid, so I was very popular.
Well, that's because you were used to being a rock and roller.
Yeah, I was used to not getting paid. So, yeah. I mean, most of them, have probably student loans and stuff to pay off. And I was not burdened with that.
Yeah. Okay, so you sat in a few times with us on sax, but of course, prominently or mainly in the band, you play guitar along with Graham Day now.
Sure.
So I guess we should, you mentioned Jeff Walls and his involvement with Tiger Tiger and him encouraging you, well, inviting you to play sax with his other bands. And then the way this timeline works is that, he becomes ill and... then we had initially planned to have some when he was first initially he was misdiagnosed and we were trying to play shows to raise money for his medical expenses, and then of course things took a turn for the worse and those shows became more like memorial shows. So was that the first time that you sat in and played guitar with us?
Yeah, definitely. I was supposed to fill in. You guys had had a tour you had booked too that he was too ill to go on, and I was supposed to just fill in on that. But we went up to Lake George and played a tiki festival up there or something like that. And I was supposed to just fill in for that ideally, but as you mentioned, unfortunately things took a turn for the worse, and he died soon after that.
Yeah. So you have been, of course, a lot of bands over the years. Is there anything unique about being in the Woggles? Anything that's different? I mean, good or bad? What's the perception? I mean, you know, of course, you're talking with me, so it's gonna be hard for you to say anything bad. But is
no,
there
anything
like
to say
you,
bad
know,
about
you
it
guys?
Anyway.
What's been that?
A blast. It's an extremely fun band to play in. I've enjoyed it quite a bit. I mean, just the, you know, the opportunity to jump around like an idiot is, you know, just right up my alley. So especially when I get to, you know, put the saxophone on and jump in the crowd and whatnot like that, it's, you know, just been a blast all the way around. It's a fun band.
Well, thanks. Well, in fact, I love that you get out in the room with the sax, because you know, so not everybody knows this, but so, you know, I will go into the audience and just great. All of a sudden you're there and people, because that's just another dimension that kind of people like, you know, get them another Tex Avery moment where their mouths drop open. Well, let's talk some about your new coolest song in the world. Our coolest song in the world this week, Her Majesty's Pleasure. It's off the new Woggles album, Time Has Come. So I wrote the lyrics, but you had already come up with a song title and the music. So what was your inspiration for Her Majesty's Pleasure?
Well, I Serve at Her Majesty's Pleasure was kind of something I'd, you know, kind of been muttering under my breath for a while when dealing with a significant other or something like that. And, you know, being asked to provide some sort of service. But the real inspiration was I guess we were on tour that I was supposed to just be filling in for Jeff Walls. And I kind of saw a picture of him dressed in his regal garb. I guess he had like a frilly outfit on and a cane and like a crushed velvet jacket and with a collar or something. I don't know if you know the photo.
It's like a promo photo, I think.
Yeah, it was a promo photo, and we were in Baltimore or something. I was waiting for you guys to wake up, and I kind of just lit it, and I said to myself, I'm like, wow, that guy really serves at His Majesty's Pleasure there. Look at that. That's a regal looking guy there. And so that, and I had been, you know, studying up on my Woggle songs a lot. So, you know, I tried to imagine if Jeff Walls had written the song or something like that while wearing his fancy outfit there, you know.
Well, so you had this initial inspiration. How close is the final product, the end product of what we've come up with, to what you initially had sort of envisioned or hoped for? Is it fairly close?
Well, I took it to John Kang's house, our buddy John Kang's, that you're, and tried to work out the demo there. And John Kang helped me a bunch, arrange it and whatnot. You know, he played the drums there. And then I guess you made me lengthen the verses a bit and stuff like that. So you did arrange some of the music as well.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I had too many words, too many lyrics to fit in there. And
Yeah. But other than arranging and actually putting words, which, you know, I prefer if the person singing the song has a hand in that. I do that. I did that a lot with Buffy Aguero and stuff. And I've done it with other groups that I've been in, is, you know, get whoever's I'm writing with is who's going to be singing the song. It's makes it more emotionally invested, I find, and more apt to want to play your song that if you collaborate with them on the words and stuff, you know. So yeah, it was pretty much all the parts were there. Just needed the words and a little arranging, and you took care of that.
One thing I love about the recording, I think we ought to give props to, is Doug Stanley, who's playing.
Doug Stanley, yes.
The keys on there. I want to say harpsichord, but it's not a harpsichord sound. It's actually, I think, a clavichord. Is that what it is?
Yeah. He that's on the front there. Yeah. Yeah, that was really added a lot.
Keeps that sort of.
You know, John Kang had come up with a little part too that I probably stole from him and didn't give him any credit for on there.
Well, he forgave you for that.
I think so. Well, we ended up writing another song together, as you know, and so, you know, I think he's all right with it.
Well, in fact, we're going to go out with that song in a moment, but I want to stay focused a bit longer on the new album, Time Has Come. So including Her Majesty's Pleasure, the 12 songs on the new album. One of them is Mr. Last Chance. That was a single last fall, and you played the guitar solo on that. I play the solo on Her Majesty's Pleasure. Do you have any other solos on the album? Or is that it? I think that's it.
Hole in My Heart, kind of. It's debatable whether that's considered a solo. Mostly I'm just feeding back, I think. Featured feedback in Hole in My Heart, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. We're also, you've got this cool part on Wearing All My Soul, this kind of Davy Allen kind of fuzz that's going on there.
Yeah, I'm playing fuzz on that. Yeah. With Greg Cartwright's playing the lead on that, though, right? Greg Cartwright.
Right, that's right. In fact, so I wanted to move on to say that, so the album's also got guitar contributions from a number of guitar playing friends of ours, including Peter Greenberg, who's from plays in Barons Sweetfield and the Savages, and Pat Deers from the Schizophonics, and as you mentioned, Greg Cartwright from the Raining Sound. There's also this guy, Stevie Van Zandt. Also,
yeah, you might have heard him.
So of all the songs that you don't play guitar on, because this was, you know, recorded over through the pandemic and bits, fits and starts, so you're not on
recording.
So do you have a favorite song that you're not on? What would be your favorite song of the ones that you don't play on?
Oh, well, the Graham ones are the Telling Me Lies. I might be on Telling Me Lies, actually, but the Graham ones are great. Telling Me Lies, that was a single of some sort, wasn't it? Or just a digital one, maybe?
Yeah, it was just a digital one. So he has two songs on there, Graham does, Telling Me Lies and Never Get Over Me.
Maybe I might be on Telling Me Lies. I can't remember. Like you said, it was stretched out over the pandemic. So, and it was such a really just stretched the whole process out so much. I have a hard time remembering what I'm on and what I'm not. According to the liner notes here, I'm actually looking at the album. I'm on Telling You Lies, but I don't think I'm on Never Get Over Me. And that's one of my favorites as well.
That's what I was thinking.
But yeah, Wearing On My Soul, which I am on, is one of my favorites. And well, I like people, Nothing More to Say, and that's Little Steven, you know. So
there you go. There you go. Very well-rounded. So we're on a tour right now. We mentioned that as we first started chatting. Tomorrow we're at Hank Deedle's in Rockville, Maryland. Tonight we're playing here in Chapel Hill, the local 506 with the Bleeps. And we played here in Chapel Hill about a year ago, so, and I remember being a really great show. Do you remember what it was like playing Chapel Hill last year?
Vaguely. Yeah. But yeah, no, it was a great time. I can't remember the bands we played with, but you know, it's all a blur after a while.
Yeah, it is a blur. There's some great interesting characters here in town though.
But I'm a big fan of the local 506, you know, from the festivals that Southern Culture on the Skids used to have there. I played
the Sleaze Fest is what you're talking about.
Fest, yeah.
Sleaze Fest, yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned Southern Culture because Southern Culture on the Skids is from here in Chapel Hill. And we're actually going to be touring with them in September. We'll play shows with them in the Northeast. So we finish these tours in the Southeast. And then we do, over the summer, we go play in play a festival in Denmark in August and play a couple of shows in the UK and then come back from that and do some shows with Southern Culture on the Skids. So before we go out, I want us to talk about the song we're going to go out with. It's another one we wrote together, Will of the Wisp, which was the B-side to our single Mr. Last Chance that came out last October on Wicked Cool Records. Take a listen to it in a moment. What are your memories of how that one came together?
Well, didn't you dream the lyrics to that one or something?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds hokey, but it really is, you know, really, this really did happen where, he had passed away. And then it was one of those dreams where you... Jeff Walls. So I'm dreaming out so it's one of those dreams where you, right before you wake up sort of thing. So it's you're in the dream, but you don't, it just, nothing is weird. I mean, there aren't pink elephants dancing on my head or anything, you know, it's not, it's just, it seems like it's, we were just in the van going to play a show and,
as you normally were,
as you normally we were. And it was like a show at a college town. And then I remember it's like this was the youth hall, since some kind of campus building, the sort of that red brick college town brick, you know. And we're loading in, and still in the dream, I thought this was really happening, because there was nothing unusual. And we've loaded in, and the flesh hammer there, Jeff Walls, is on stage, and he's, you know, plugging in his guitar, and he and I have no idea what the original melody was, but the words were, I'm the will of the wisp, I'm a Trusigan man, I do all that I wish, I do all that I can. Or maybe it just been the first two lines, I came over the second two lines later, but it really, I was, wow, what's that, Jeff? And sometimes Jeff was a very, very cool guy, but sometimes you have this very sort of dismissive sort of back. So it's always sort of waving a gnat away. You know, it's oh man, but this is something I play all the time. You've never heard that? So, no, I've never heard that. I've heard you do that before. So no, I'm doing it all the time. You just haven't been paying attention. And I'm like, yeah, And I said, well, I think it's really great. We should. And he's like, well, you want to do something with it? Yes, I think we should do something with it. That sounds really cool. And he's like, oh, sure, you can. We'll do something with it. You just have that. And now, so what happens is, and I was told this later on, people said, oh, yeah, you can't write things down in dreams. It's actually very difficult to, in a dream, to like write something. Have you ever heard that?
I've heard that, and I've experienced it as well. I used to cook for a living, and I'd wake up in the middle of I couldn't read like tickets for like, you know, for the food I was supposed to make, and I'd wake up in a sweat all the time. Sometimes I still do, but yes, I've experienced this.
Okay, so that was creating anxiety when you were telling me this. So similarly, I was like, oh, I don't want to forget the lyric. And so I was walking around in the space there in the room, trying to find something to write on. And we turned the flyers over, and they had like a little rack of upcoming show handbills, and I'm pull them out, but they all have something on the back. And then I'm figuring out, oh, I could just write right in the little tiny corner of the margins of these things. And then had to find a pen, and then none of the pens would work. And then suddenly I realized, oh, this isn't real, you know, and woke up, and then actually got up and ran into the other room and wrote down the lyrics. I thought, wow, it just sounded so cool, and started singing the thing over and over again. But we got together with your buddy John Kang and Buzz Hagstrom and Dan Electro to do sort of a session, but I think that's when we really fleshed the song out.
Fleshed it out.
Yeah. Speaking of the flesh hammer. And then on the recording,
he's probably wondering where his royalties are somewhere.
What's that?
He's probably wondering where his royalties are somewhere for having written those lyrics for you.
Well, as he said, he gave it to me. It was clearly he gave it to me. So, and his widow Ladyfingers is on the on the recording.
That was a nice touch. Vibes.
What were we saying?
That was a nice touch.
Yeah, she provides
his colors on there.
Yeah, have these sort of haunting sort of backing vocals on there. And I believe John is responsible for writing the bridge, John Kang.
Yeah, I believe so. But I'm pretty sure he came up with the middle eight there, whatever you want to call it.
Yes, the middle eight. The middle eight. So we're going to play that in a moment. But first, Shane, thank you for yakking with me on our coolest conversations.
Well, I mean, I'll see you in the van, man.
And we want to encourage everybody to come out tonight. Chapel Hill doors are at 7 and the show's at 8. That's what it says on the website. And please check out the rest of our tour dates online at thewoggles.com. As I mentioned, we'll be playing shows with Chapel Hill Southern Culture on the Skids in the fall. Even right now, I'm going to take a listen to the Woggles B-side. It's Will of the Wisp in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
As the morning arrives,
with a tad of Will of the Wisp. That's my band, The Woggles, here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to our guitarist, Shane Pringle, for speaking with me today. Thanks also to Sammy Savenza for producing our podcast. Next time around, I'll be joined by Louis Cabezas. He's the guitarist in the Dolly Rots. Wrapped in Sunshine is their latest single. It's out on Wicked Cool, and we'll find out all about it and the band's upcoming tour on your next Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.